listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, what up? Big day, big day, big day! Welcome in to the Forza Podcast. It is Marsh, your co-host. I am doing fabulous. I am doing spectacular. I am on cloud nine right now. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, give it just what's going on? What are we saying?
Oh, dude, I am hyped. I'm hyped out of my mind right now, bro.
You know, I don't think I could ever be like the Canes announced today that spring practices will be, suspended until further notice. And I'm probably as high on my I'm just high on life right now. Yeah, it sucks that, you know, we won't be on Green Tree next week and who the hell knows what's going to happen with the spring game. But you know what? My classes just got canceled because of the coronavirus. The podcast is freaking killing it. We have three incredible guests for you tonight. So anything else you want to say, Jordan, before we hop in?
I mean, not really, man. You kind of say I'm just too hyped. I'm sad that spring ball's getting canceled or at least postponed. I hope that doesn't mess with our trip and what we're doing. But you know, it's good stuff. The podcast is killing it. I was tweeting a little bit earlier, like I finally, after 2.5 months of producing this podcast, figured out how to look at our analytics. And yeah, man, numbers are good. We're I don't know. It's a good day, Marsh. Just at a loss of words, brother.
Yeah, and we'll touch on that just a little bit later. But we are going to bring on. Is our first guest ready? Is he ready to go?
Yeah, I believe he is. Let me patch him in.
Cool.
Hello.
Hello, this is Ryan.
Ryan, how you doing, man? This is Jordan.
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Dude, so happy to have you.
What's going on, Ryan? It's Marsh here, and you are on the Fords Up podcast. We now welcome on our newest guest, someone that I've wanted to bring on for a little while now, Ryan Roberts, scouting coordinator from NFL Draft Bible. You do like 50 things. You want to tell the people who else you contribute for?
Yeah, man. So like you said, NFL Draft Bible is the main thing. You're right. I do a lot. I just started working for Brawl Network, where I'm doing some freelance writing for them, doing their NFL draft show every week. Also do stuff for Pro Football Ready, do some podcasting over there, but mostly it's all articles and, you know, highlighting some NFL draft prospects. So yeah, do a lot of things, but it's all NFL draft centric, man. So this time of year is a fun ride for me. So,
well, hey, man, we are happy to have you on. And I know that you know, you just wrote an article about Gregory, so we're going to get into that a little bit later. We first wanted to dig into this NFL draft and the combine that just passed. So Miami, 8 Canes were at the combine, 7 participated. And, you know, I'm sure that you've looked at some of the Hurricanes. Which Miami guy entering the draft this year stands out to you the most?
So I've been on the Jeff Thomas hype train for a little bit, man. Like I loved his film. I love the flashes you see. For a smaller guy, obviously he has the speed attributes, but also he wins a lot of contested catch situations. He makes some spectacular catches. So I was really looking forward to seeing how he was. I knew he would run relatively fast. He didn't run quite as fast as I thought. I thought he was going to be a 4.3 kid, but you know, for a guy like him, the off the field stuff, the interview process was probably a lot more for him, a lot more important for him down in Indianapolis. So if I had to peg one guy, I've been a Jeff Thomas supporter for the talents. I'm just hoping that the off the field stuff kind of checks out for him.
No, I mean, you're preaching to the choir, man. That's been our thoughts with Jeff Thomas since he came to Miami. I mean, honestly, he is probably one of the most gifted and talented receivers to come through the University of Miami and 10, 15 years. And, you know, this is including Amon Richards and Travis Benjamin, things like that. Jeff Thomas is an incredible football player. And I was actually, really shocked at his 40 time. Cause I know he's faster than that, but, which Miami guy do you think had the best? And also which Miami guy do you think had the worst combine in terms of their, draft stock?
I think the best would probably be KJ Osborne, the other wide receiver. His tape's very solid. You know, Miami's passing game was a little bit of a mixed bag, obviously, as you guys know. But KJ's a rock solid player. He does some of the dirty things. 4.48 in the 40 is a really nice time for him. He's, you know, he's a pretty well built kid. You know, only about 5'11", but he's got around 200, 205. He's got a pretty solid frame. And the guy that had to be the biggest disappointment, in my opinion, was Trevon Hill. I expected so much from him for coming over from Virginia Tech. Had some huge flashes for the Hokies. Obviously, he didn't do this year what I thought he was going to do. Some of that had to do with, obviously, you know, Greg Russo bursting onto the scene. He was in a crowded depth chart with Jonathan Garvin, other guys. But, you know, 4.89 at like 243 pounds, 245 pounds, whatever he came in as. I thought he was a better athlete than that. I was hoping he was a better athlete for that, for his draft stock's sake. But, you know, it just was not a great showing. And I find it very hard to believe that he's going to hear his name called when the 2020 NFL draft officially kicks off.
Wow. Oh, wow. That's a bold statement, man.
That's tough, man. That's tough to hear.
I know, man. So it's funny, man. Like, I heard you leave your bold takes off of Twitter and you put it on radio. So there's one for you guys.
Well, I love it, man. Hey, so DJ Dallas is a fan favorite. I mean, everyone loves DJ. He's been, I mean, kind of the de facto, like, one of the leaders of this team for the last 3 years. What can you tell us about him in terms of how he did at the combine, his draft stock, and kind of what you're expecting from when he gets into the league, if he has potential to be a three down back, or if he'll be more of like a, you know, just have a smaller role than that. So
DJ, you know, relative to expectations, I was expecting a mid 4.5 kind of guy at 217 pounds. He ran 4.58. So there wasn't any, you know, I wasn't disappointed. I wasn't like super jumping out of my seat or anything. I felt like he checked some boxes. He did relatively well. From a, you know, a film perspective, there's a whole lot to work with. He's a natural athlete. You know, he did a lot of the gadget stuff early on in his career. He has experience in the pass game, screen game. There's a lot to like about DJ Dallas. I'm a fan of him. I was hoping for a little more development this year as far as just like a natural feel as a runner. I feel like he's not as patient, you know, in zone concepts, doing some just things that kind of take time. It's more of an experience factor for him. But moving forward, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if a team got him somewhere on day three, let him do a lot of things on third downs, on special teams, let him get him some action, and then he kind of develops from there. So early on, I think he's kind of a specialist to a degree, specializing on third downs, doing some things in that area, and then, you know, as he becomes more and more comfortable, then we'll see what the overall potential is for him.
Okay. And so Ryan, a problem that Miami has had over the past several years is we've had a few juniors declare early and then not maybe get drafted as high as they wanted to or they thought they would. Which juniors that left early this year for Miami, who do you think should have stayed for possibly one more year with the Hurricanes?
So the immediate response is Trevon Hill came to my mind, but you know, now that I think about it with, you know, the Jalen Phillips and Greg Russo coming back and Quincy from Temple coming over Roach, it didn't make any sense for him. One guy I was really surprised that he left, even though I like his tape a decent amount, is Trajan Bandy. I feel like he's a good football player, but in a really good cornerback class with a lack of size where they might just slot it inside to the nickel position mostly, I felt like it was an odd one. You know, for next year's cornerback class is not great right now as we see it. You know, the guys that we know are in the class, you know, there's a couple nice guys at the top like Paulson Adebo and a couple different guys. But I feel like it just from a draft stock perspective, I feel like Trajan Bandy really could have done with going back for one more year and testing a little less of a talented cornerback class.
Yeah, I'm just as puzzled as you are, because like I feel like Bandy had his worst year as a Hurricane. The kind of the rumor going around was that there's some family issues why he left, but I mean, other than that, I'm just as stumped as you are, man. It doesn't really make sense with him. But some other players that I was really curious about is we had Michael Pinckney and Shaq Quarterman as four-year starters here. A lot of the fans kind of have a love-hate relationship with them. You know, love that they started so many games for us, provided the leadership, but lots of complaints about how slow they were. Does that show to you on tape, you know, their lack of speed, or what's your prediction on them?
So, I mean, I remember when they were both true freshmen, and the, McLeod, I think, is still there, and it was kind of like, this is the linebacker class of the future. Like, these are the guys, you know, and it was – I wasn't shocked about the times, to be honest. I mean, I feel like Shaq Quarterman, in my opinion, and stayed pretty steady through my film process with him is – I think he's a really solid two-down player who's going to do a lot of good things on first and second down, obvious running downs. I feel like he's not a dynamic athlete. He's okay in a straight line, but he doesn't really redirect in space very well. He's not going to do much on third downs. And, I mean, I'm going to be very honest with you guys. Pinckney's tape this last year was not good. I did not like it at all, and he's an undersized guy who's not a great athlete either, so I'm not really sure what the sell is with him, but – you know, I'm a fan to a degree with Quarterman, though, and any times that he put on the field, I mean, during the combine drills, it didn't surprise me. They just kind of reaffirmed what I thought. But, you know, for him, it didn't matter as much to me how he tested personally.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. And no, it is weird. And, you know, going to what you said about Pinckney this year and what Jordan said about Trajan Bandy this year, it feels like you know, a lot of those guys degressed in 2019. But I wanted to go through the eight Canes prospects that are going into the NFL draft. And you just tell me where you think they'll be drafted and what kind of player you see them being. So starting off, Jonathan Garvin.
So I actually like Jonathan Garvin a little more than others. His 2018 tape was a lot better than this past season, but I think there is some talent there. I'm going to go somewhere on day three. I'll say he sneaks into like a fifth round range, and I think he is a developmental edge that has some potential.
Okay. And the rest of the guys we've kind of talked about, but just to give a clear answer, KJ Osborne.
Think KJ is a similar kind of guy. I think it'll boost him a little bit with the good 40 time. I think he's, you know, a third, fourth receiver at the next level. Hopefully he can do a little something on special teams to help out. I'd say somewhere in day three as well. I think maybe like a sixth round pick or so.
Okay. What about our boy DJ Dallas?
DJ, similar area. I wouldn't be surprised if he went early day three. I would say probably the ceiling's around fourth round. He's a guy that's going to be a little undervalued. His talent could be potentially a little higher than that, but just the tape was kind of a mixed bag playing on a very underwhelming offense. So I'll go fourth round for DJ.
Okay. And then the two linebackers, Shaq Quarterman and Mike Pinckney.
So I would take Shaq probably early day three as well, but I feel like having that good run stopping linebacker on first and second downs is still important, despite, you know, linebackers kind of becoming a little undervalued. I think he might sneak into the end of the second day, so I'll say third round pick maybe for Shaq. Mike Pinckney, on the other hand, I don't think he's going to get drafted. I just don't see any upside with his lack of size and lack of athleticism.
Dang, that sucks. That sucks. Okay. Our boy and your boy, Jeff Fromm.
What's that?
Sorry, go ahead, Jordan.
Oh, sorry. I was just saying pour one out for Mike. I feel bad.
We can pour a couple out for him, man. I feel bad. You know, it stinks. It's honestly like we have the NFL draft NFL draft Bible draft guide coming out in a couple weeks, man. And if you guys, you know, take a look at it and you see what I wrote about Pinckney, I'm sorry in advance, man. It's the worst part of the job is to put, you know, negatives on these guys, but it's just, oh man, his 2018 was a little better. So maybe some people bank on better tape in 2018, but like the last season was not great.
No, I mean, that's just a part of the business. I mean, us as Canes fans, we loved watching these guys the past 4 years, but you know, we can't sugarcoat some of their flaws once they get to the NFL. I mean, so no hard feelings at all. Okay, what about Jeff Thomas?
Talent-wise, Jeff Thomas is a day two pick. It's the toughest one just because it really depends on how he did in the team interviews and how he's going to present himself. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be drafted much lower than the quality of player. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to slide to late day three just because of so many off-field variables. But I mean, if he's healthy and he's, you know, he doesn't have the off-field stuff hanging over his head, if he's able to show himself that he's a clear guy, a clean guy, and he's, you know, he's committed to football, I think he's a day two player, second or third round, but I think that he's going to have a huge slide, unfortunately.
No, and then that's something that we were that we've all been thinking. I mean, the talent is off the charts. When he has the football in his hands, he's one of the best in all of college football. But yeah, there's just so much going on outside of the football field. Okay, I think this is the last two, unless I already asked you. Trayvon Hill and Trajan Bandy.
Trajan Bandy, I think, is a day three corner, nickel specialist. So it could go anywhere between 4 to 7. I feel like fifth round is probably the sweet spot. I really do like Trajan a lot. I just feel like he's just limited to one role. There's no real ability for him to play outside it. I think he weighed in like 5'7" and 7/8" or something like that. Like, there's just no possibility of him playing outside. So him there, and then Trayvon Hill, like I said before, he's an undersized edge player who didn't have a great 2019 and then tested poorly for his size. So undrafted free agent.
Well, thanks, man. That's wow, that's pretty comprehensive. That's good stuff. So Marsh was going to ask you about your Greg Rousseau article.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's something that you know, I love Greg Rousseau. I think he's going to be a top 10 pick. I think he's just absolutely incredible. What he was able to do in 2019, starting, he didn't even start until week 6, I believe. But yeah, we love Rousseau around here. And so you had the chance to not just write an article on him, but to interview him as well, correct?
Yes. Yep. Got to sit down with him. Had probably about like a 15-20 minute conversation with the guy.
Good deal. Good deal. So just, I mean, right off the bat, tell us about how the interview went and what it was like chatting with big old Greg.
Yeah, I mean, so it's really weird for guys of that status and that caliber, All-American guys. Sometimes they're like a little standoffish. And I have to say, just from a character perspective, Greg was awesome, man. Like, he was really fun and funny, and he was very, you know, just, I mean, I've reached out to him, and he was just like, yeah, man, anytime you want. So he was a really easy guy to talk to. I really just enjoy the interview, because that's honestly my favorite part of, you know, what I do, is just being able to hear people's backstories and getting a little deeper glimpse into them as people. And Greg checked boxes for me from that perspective. I really honestly enjoyed it. It was one of my favorite interviews, I would say, for a while now. He was an awesome guy overall.
Yeah, for the amount of success that he had in 2019, I mean, Rousseau's just a real humble guy. And then that's why, you know, so many Canes fans love him. He's not, you know, that what a lot of people think of Miami Hurricanes being loud and everything. He's a very, very humble guy. Do you think that there, or let me ask you this, what do you think sets Rousseau apart from other defensive ends and even, you know, the top defensive ends returning in 2020?
I mean, so the first thing that pops off obviously is, I mean, like you said, the first few games, he was only playing, he even told me, between 15 and 20 snaps a game. And then, I mean, he still ended up with 15 and a half sacks, so 19 and a half tackles for loss. Like, the production obviously pops off. Him from a physical perspective, he's 6'7", long arms. Like, you see that stuff very easily. But the thing that I think really separates him and makes him a potential fit on any type of defensive scheme is that dude has some transitional quickness. He moves in short spaces very quickly for a guy that's 6'7", and usually those guys take a lot longer to get from point A to point B. So he has that. Miami used him all up the defensive line. I saw him in a zero true nose. I saw him at 3 tech. I saw him, you know, playing some 5'7" all the way out to 9. Like, use him all over. He's kind of that chess piece, and, you know, an athlete of that size you don't see too often.
So, I mean, here, like, the Miami Hurricanes fan base, we know how to manufacture some hype, and we often get ourselves too, you know, amped up about things that aren't necessarily realistic. In my mind, and I'm guilty of this too, but in my mind, I see potential for him to go, like, first round, you know, even top half of the first round. Do you see that too, or what are you kind of expecting Obviously, he's got another year to play, but what are you thinking happens next year in the draft with Greg Rousseau?
I mean, if everything goes, you know, the trajectory it's going, I mean, the dude is super talented. It would not surprise me at all if he's the next top five, top 10 pick with that size and length. I mean, everything is there, honestly. I you know, obviously, I don't do an official breakdown or your scouting report on him, you know, because who knows if he's even coming out next year. But the glimpses, I mean, 6'7", 260 plus, that athlete, like, it's hard to imagine him not going first round somewhere.
Bro, that just got me so hyped because I cannot tell you. I mean, you're an NFL draft guy. You know that the Miami Hurricanes once dominated the first round. And yes. It has been a very long time. I don't even know the last guy we had in the top 10. And I really, really do think Rousseau is a top 10 talent.
I think Eric Flowers, wasn't he like 13th? Like
something like that. Yeah. He was around. Actually, no, I think he might've been like 9th. That might be your answer right there.
Yeah.
All right. Look at Ryan showing us the Canes facts. I know you wrote this in your article and I read the article. It was a great piece. So I already know the answer to this. But explain who you would compare Rousseau to in the NFL.
Yeah, so I went back to some Jason Pierre-Paul a little bit coming out of South Florida, and like for people that don't remember, you know, everyone just thinks about the, you know, the fireworks stuff or whatever, but like him coming out of South Florida, that dude at 6'5 plus, 270 plus was doing like 10 backflips in a row and stuff, like super freak. He could do anything on the football field. And, you know, if you remember his time with the New York Giants and, you know, even recently, I mean, he had 11 and a half sacks 2 years ago. So he's a super athlete for a guy his size, kind of the similar way I view Greg Rousseau. And he's a guy also that can play up and down the defensive line with his size, his power. So I feel like there's a similar thing. He just looked kind of like a slender Jason Pierre-Paul coming out of college. Like there's just, they don't make athletes that size and athleticism too often.
So I know this isn't about Greg Rousseau, but I just can't help myself. Cause you've gotten me so excited with saying that Greg might be an early pick.
Yeah.
I mean, have you watched enough of Quincy Roche to give us a take on him? I know you haven't broken him down probably as thoroughly as you will. But I mean, is he first round potential as well?
Yeah. So I live right over the bridge from Temple. I'm about 20 minutes out of Temple. So I've seen Quincy live like at actual games before. And I'll tell you, that dude's super talented. I'm so excited to see him paired with Greg. And I know you guys got Jalen Phillips coming back too. So you guys, I mean, that tandem, I would be hard pressed to find a better three man tandem in all of college football as far as edge guys. So yeah, I think Quincy could definitely be that caliber. He's not quite the greatest athlete in the world from my viewing, but he's got some advanced hand usage. He's a smart rusher who understands leverage points, and I'm really excited. I mean, I just asked somebody today who actually covers Temple football, and I just said, you know, what are we expecting this year from Gregory Rousseau and Quincy when they get down to Miami? And he said that I don't think that there's going to be a better defensive end tandem in college football this year.
Jeez, you're making me so excited. I'm gonna have to dump a cold bucket of water on my head after this.
The future is bright, man. The future is bright down there, I think. And you guys got De'Aaron King coming in now, too. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Bro, we got De'Aaron King. We got Rhett Lashley. We have the pieces. And this is just another question. Have you watched much tape? And this is another potential first rounder in 2021, tight end Brevin Jordan.
Oh yeah. I've seen Brevin. I've seen the other tight end. I know a lot of people like too, the Mallory kid. Brevin is the early, I mean, between him and Freiermuth from Penn State, they're the early favorites for tight end one. Brevin is like, you don't make athletes like that at tight end too often. I've seen you guys throw bubble screens to him. Like he is a super athletic kid. So yeah, I definitely have Brevin on my radar. I've already made my list for, you know, positional kind of guys to watch for 2021, starting that pretty soon. So Brevin was one of the top two guys at tight end that I was looking at in the, I know Florida, University of Florida has a kid named Pitts. That's pretty good too. So yes, Brevin is firmly on my radar, and he's an athletic freak as well. So
I didn't know there was any other schools in Florida besides Miami. I'll on that. Okay, so last question, just for the Miami Dolphins fans out there. I know they're very anxious about this upcoming draft. You think the Dolphins end up with Tua, or what's going to happen at their quarterback spot?
Oh, man, is Tua worthy of that pick? 100% he is. I mean, I feel like if he was completely healthy, there were no health concerns, I think that he would honestly have a little bit of a battle between him and Burrow. But if he's there at five, I think you pull the trigger. I really do. My dad's a Miami Dolphins fan, so I talk to him about this a whole lot. And, you know, I feel like if you tell me that the hip is not a major concern, it's not a long concern for the future of Tua, I feel like you take him if he's there at five. Now, the question is he going to be there? That is, you know, there's a couple trade up options. We'll see, you know, with the Chargers and the Panthers maybe moving up. Who knows what happened in there? Like, there's a couple teams that I know will have a high interest in him as well. So if he's there at five, you got to go him. If he's not, though, I'm a little scared about what might happen for that pick.
Yeah. You think, are you taking Justin Herbert or Jordan Love if you don't have Tua on the board?
All right, ready for another hot take, man. I got Jordan Love as my third-ranked quarterback. I would be willing to roll with it. Now, five is a little rich for my blood. For Jordan Love, I gave him a first-round grade, but not a high first-round grade. I do like a lot of the tools to work with. I gave Herbert a late first-round grade as well. He is very toolsy. He's got seemingly all the talent. There's just something missing there. Like, it's just something from a just natural understanding of concepts, being able to throw to different leverages. Like, there's just something missing with him that he scares me so much. So, even though Jordan Love had the down year, I'd be willing to gamble on those traits because you see it. Like, it's there. And he, you know, natural accuracy, he has everything. So, yeah. I feel like, though, if Tua's not there, I might consider a trade back option if something's on the possibility for me.
I'm definitely with you there on Love over Herbert. I actually went to school at Utah State. So I saw Love quite a bit, and I'm just not a Herbert fan, so I'm with you there.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah. How do you like have you seen any tapes over the last couple of years? I wonder if your opinion on David Woodward, because I'm really struggling, like, why no one's talking about him much. I liked his tape a little bit, the linebacker from Utah State. It's kind of odd that no one's talking about him much.
I didn't watch enough of their, you know, I'd tune in and pay attention to Jordan Love and stuff, especially when they had the great year 2 years ago with the dudes at Texas Tech. Now I can't think of their name. David Yost and Matt Wells. Yes. But honestly, I couldn't give you an educated opinion on that dude. Mostly focusing on Miami football. So,
okay, gotcha.
Okay. Ryan, I promise this is the last question. So Jordan and I were both diehard Canes fans. I'm from South Florida, but we both live in Utah. So, and I love the Utes. What are your thoughts on Zach Moss?
I actually interviewed Zach before. He's an awesome dude. I feel like there's a lot of things, you know, just from injury perspective, he's been banged up a little bit. He didn't have a great combine showing, which, you know, I really wasn't worried about, but I really do like Zach a whole lot. I feel like he's at least a first and second down runner, and there is no better contact balance in this class than him. I mean, that dude, there is absolute effort. And, you know, it was one quick note from my interview with him a while ago was he told me his favorite running back was Marshawn Lynch, and it makes complete sense with how he runs. That dude runs angry. So I'm a big fan of Zach. Not sure where he'll end up being pegged just because of the injury concerns, but he's definitely a guy that could be a lead ball carrier at the next level.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, he's a South Florida kid too. He actually was committed to Miami at one point, and when I covered the Utes, I got to sit down with him and some of the other Utes that are going to be drafted. So, they got a good class. But Ryan, thank you so, so much. This interview was awesome, man. We may be hitting you up in the future to come back on, but thank you so much for taking the time to work out the schedule. I know it was kind of difficult there for a minute, but yeah, just thank you again, brother.
Oh, I appreciate you guys, man. Anytime you want to bring me back on, just hit me up and we'll make it happen, okay?
Okay. Love it, Ryan. Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. See ya. Dude, that was sick. Bro, I love talking NFL, bro.
Bro, that was honestly, I could have talked to him for another hour.
I know, dude. I felt like a little kid just like waiting to have my questions answered, you know?
Yeah, dude. That was awesome. That was one of the better interviews that we've had. Definitely have to bring him on again. It's great. It's good to see that he's a big Jeff Thomas guy, and he saw what Canes fans have been seeing talent wise for the past 3 years. But obviously, definitely looks like his off the field crap is gonna hold him back. And it really sucks about Trayvon Hill. It was like a week and a half ago where I saw that Trayvon was probably that he was gonna be the highest drafted Hurricane.
Yeah, man. I was kind of surprised by that. I definitely believe him. I mean, I was kind of wondering why Hill didn't make more noise as a Cane, but you know, it's whatever. I was kind of sad to hear what he had to say about Pinckney as well, because I've always enjoyed watching him.
Oh yeah, dude. Pinckney is one of my favorite Canes the past like 5-10 years. Dude is just so awesome. Like, I've talked to him a few times. Just so nice. He's hilarious too. But I guess NFL GMs don't really care if how funny you are.
Yeah, dude, I'd be a starting quarterback for some team out there.
Yeah, he'd be an awesome guest to have on. I love Pinckney, man. When he picked off Francois against FSU, that was seriously one of my favorite moments in the past few years.
Yeah, no, absolutely, man. That's anytime you can. Dude, anytime we do anything against FSU, I just love it. It just seems so much cooler.
FSU is just like, it's just, they're so stupid, you know? They're such idiots. Just so lame, bro. Like,
I read a scientific study that does say that FSU blows.
Yeah, and I think that was like one of the, I'm trying to think of a name of a scientist that just shows how dumb I am, but FSU, they're just so stupid. I just love talking crap on FSU. Like it's not like a few years ago when you would talk heat on FSU, but then their fans would be like, oh, but we've beaten you 6-7 straight years. Yeah. It's like, we obviously have the upper hand right now in the rivalry. Like, they suck. I'm pretty sure St. Thomas Aquinas could beat them, but yeah, they're just so stupid.
At what point do we get to do that one thing that I just can't stand when teams do this, when we're like, oh, it's not even a rivalry anymore, bro. Like, we've beat them like 6 times in a row. It's not even a rivalry.
It will all, bro. I just
said I hate when fans do that, man. They're just like, oh no, our rival's Virginia Tech now, dude.
No, FSU will always and forever be our number one rival. I don't care what any, I will argue any Canes fans. I don't care how long you've been a fan. I will argue you. I'm so illiterate right now, but I will debate you to the death that FSU is and will always be Miami's number one rival. I just hate them.
No, I agree, man. I agree. All right. So what else we got cooking? I'm drawing a blank right now.
Well, we got our second of third guest. I think he should be ready.
So he just messaged me and said he's going to be ready in just a few moments.
So we have to talk until then. Jake, and you know I love you. But that interview was just awesome. Like, it felt good to like talk some NFL.
Dude, I was thinking about that. I'm thinking maybe in the summer, you know, we'll have to touch on a few more topics when it gets real slow around here. You know, so I guess if you're out there listening, hit us up on Twitter. Like, tell us if you think it'd be horrible that we're, you know, touching here on the NFL and NBA a little bit when there's just not a lot of Miami stuff to go around. We definitely want to keep churning out material and whatever, but we don't want to bore you guys, you know?
Yeah. And getting back to what Jordan was talking about at the beginning of the show, we're not guys that'll freak out about analytics or anything like that. We're doing this podcast just because we love the Canes and we love talking about it. I can't tweet all day, so I can't blog all day, but we just found out we were ranked 61st out of all football podcasts in America, and I remember when the Orange Bowl boys first cracked the top 100, and I'm just thinking holy crap, those guys are celebrities, and I know I'm the furthest thing away from that. I'm a child, I'm immature, but I don't know, seeing that it was I don't want to say emotional because I'm not a pansy, I'm a football guy, but it was just dope. It's just awesome to see, and we cannot thank you Canes fans enough for all the support and all the listening and tweeting with us. But
it's mostly, we still got a long ways to go, and I'm still grinding, but it felt good to kind of have the effort validated a little bit, I don't know. I mean, we met shortly after the Florida game and have kind of been working towards some stuff ever since.
Yeah. I mean, I think I actually know exactly when we first met. It was right before the Central Michigan game, and we talked about it, and I expressed to you how I've been meaning to get into the podcast game, and you've been the perfect co-host, brother. I could not have picked a better guy to, first of all, a smarter guy, because for those of you listening, I'm not good with computers. I don't do technology. I just know how to talk about football, and Jordan has come up huge with that. It's been a very, very fun few months, and I'm just excited for what the future holds for the Fours Up.
Yeah, me too, man. Well, looks like our guest is ready, and thank you for that compliment, by the way. I appreciate it, bro.
Of course,
bro. All righty, I'm going to patch him in right now.
Yo, yo.
Yo, yo, yo. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, man?
What's going on, brother K? We now welcome on my boy James at Canes Edit. Everyone knows him. Everyone loves him. He's one of my good friends in the Canes community. Love him to death. James, what's going on, bro?
Nothing much, man. Pondering about that ominous prediction I made a couple weeks ago about the spring game. And finally, that we've got confirmation that the spring game is canceled, and so is everything else with our hurricane season going on right now. So,
and everyone laughed at us when you and I like 2 weeks ago said we wouldn't go to a Canes tailgate because of this, and everyone called us crazy. And now who's the crazy one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like being right about stuff like this, but I just pretty much just followed the trend from when this was only 500 to 1,000 people in China all the way to here. When I'm this is not slowing down. It's not mutating into something less. It's actually getting more aggressive. And then I was I wonder if this is going to impact our hurricane season. I mean, I hope it doesn't impact tailgate season. Well, we're still on for I don't think they've announced anything for the upcoming football season, but I know that our baseball season ended today, so I'm pretty bummed out about that as well.
Yeah, that definitely sucks. I personally, I don't think it'll affect the regular season. We'll still be there in the orange lot tailgating. But before the question escapes my mind, James, you and I are both Hollywood, Florida natives, 954, represent. You talked to my dad the night before the UF game for a while about where we came from. And our friend Jordan here is going to be visiting Hollywood, or South Florida, I should say, for the first time in his life. He's going to be staying with me just down in Hollywood. Give him 3 restaurant recommendations for Jordan to check out.
I'm going to write these down, bro.
Well, the first one would be La Tub. La Tub is a place that I went with. I go with Steve and sometimes Cam of Inside the U or no, State of the U, excuse me. We go over there to La Tub. We met up a couple of times over there. That's a good spot to go to.
What kind of food?
That's a they got burgers, the best burgers in my opinion, probably all of Florida. Yeah, bro. And the peel any shrimp, Steve at Kane's thing put me onto the peel any shrimp there, and I'm like, whoa, that's some life changing peel any shrimp. They do it really good. They have like a special spice thing. Yeah, no, for sure. And the second one would be my personal favorite for wings is Ricky's right there on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yes, classic spot, bro. Classic spot.
Ricky's, man. That's how I get my wings tossed up with the garlic, man. And that's that. You have to go there. Ricky's is absolutely where it's at for wings. Shenanigans is also very good, but I like Ricky's. I'm a Ricky's guy. So.
Okay. What? Give one. Give us one more.
It would probably have to be Villa Rose, man. Villa Rose is to me is the best pizza in Hollywood. So you got to stop by to pick up a pie at Villa Rose, man, if you're coming to Hollywood.
Bro, and poor Jordan has only had Utah pizza. And I'm telling you, man, Villa Rose, like, I've had some really, really good pizza in my life, you know, whether it's New York, Chicago, South Florida. Villa Rose is up there with one of my favorites. That place, and it is incredible. So, Jordan, I hope you're writing this down.
Oh, dude, I took notes. And you know, like, Utah, Salt Lake City has a pretty decent food scene in some areas. Like, the Greek food's good, the Italian food's good, the Vietnamese food is good. But, like, pizza is one where we've completely just missed on, dude. And I don't get it, because it seems like it wouldn't be hard to have a few good pizza spots, right?
No, absolutely.
Like, you cannot find good, like, you can't find great pizza in Salt Lake City anywhere. And it just... It upsets me, man.
Bro, freaking, I will say to this day that my dad's homemade pizza is the best pizza in Salt Lake. But James, let's get into some Canes, man.
Obviously,
spring practice has been, I guess, suspended for the time being. But let's talk about the first weekend and kind of what your thoughts were going into spring practice. How are you feeling about the team right now?
Obviously coming off a devastating season last year. I like the fact that Derek King's already making all the other quarterbacks better around him. That's always a positive. And I think that it's that type of structuring that carries on over to the year after, where we only got him for 1 year. But if you can make the quarterbacks better and increase competition now, then those quarterbacks are just going to probably continue getting better. So I like the fact that we're laying down a foundation of finally getting some good quarterbacks in there. I do like that we're going spread. I always wanted a system that we took advantage of the South Florida speed and some of the wide receivers we got from the local, from our hometown, and we could finally use some of the speed. And, you know, I think that the spread was the best system for them. I know that Roman was a Lashley guy early. I think you may have been as well. But Lashley was the names that everybody wanted to get into, you know, as far as offensive coordinator. I'm glad we picked them up, so.
Me too, man. I was all about Lashley because I always wanted us to do a power spread just because, I mean, like you said, you got so much speed and talent, especially at athlete positions in South Florida. And, I mean, I just feel like we've underutilized our backs in the last few years, you know? Like, we had Mark Walton and Travis Homer on the same team and like, still lost three games, you know? I feel like if our offense – oh, well, and that's with a top-10 defense. Like, if you have two running backs that good in a top-10 defense, you should be doing a lot better than going on a three-game losing streak to end the year. So, I mean, I don't know, man. I'm with you. But my question for you is, what are your position groups that you're most worried about going into the season?
What I've been worried about since 2016, man, and that's corner. We just, for some odd reason, our secondaries, I feel like, yeah, we picked up, obviously, Avante Williams. I've heard, like, there are rumblings that he might play corner and not safety. I'm not sure. But I know that, obviously, corner is a place that we want to be able to stack up more talent at. And it's a place that I always looked at, like, we need more talent. Offensive line, I mean, I haven't seen a good offensive line since 2013 with Feliciano and McDermott and all those guys. I mean, we need to bring back that kind of spirit offensive line and the people that can help facilitate that, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, for a little bit, it was like the strength of our team, you know. And I mean, now I don't even know what we're doing. Like, I don't see any of these guys going to the NFL. I mean, maybe like Jakai Clark, but I don't know.
DJ Scaife will go to the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But going back to corners, James, and you've been a Canes fan for a very long time. You know, you've been around the program. What are your thoughts on Coach Rumpf?
He's a great developer. He's obviously he was a first round talent, I believe, right when he got drafted. I mean, I really wish he would be a little bit better at recruiting, getting some high, you know, more key guys. But I mean, there's a lot of competition with coaches in that position as well. So I mean, we can't discount that. There's a lot of schools that have already ingrained themselves as that position. You like LSU, they call it DBU and UFO. You know, they got the DBU going on. So when it's ingrained and it's marketed like that, a lot of kids, when they're even in high school, look to hopefully develop their talents in one of these schools. So they always pick up very good talent. Ohio State, obviously, where they have very good, you know, secondary development that goes into the NFL. We just have to do a better job, I think, of marketing. We have to get one good solid season, some good stats of our corners, and maybe we can turn some of this around and get some of these guys that wouldn't have come here to come here. So.
No, absolutely. And Kay, I want to get some emotional Canes fans talking between the three of us. Like I said, you know, James, you've been a diehard Cane for a long time. Describe last season for you as a Hurricanes fan and someone who's been around Miami, you know, their entire life.
To me, it was devastating. I actually went to the game with Danny Boy Cane. And I remember his face was pretty much summed it up. I mean, he was devastated. He couldn't believe what he was looking at. Everybody in that stadium there, there's just, it was, words can't really put it into emotion. I mean, it's just, it was one of the lowest points I've ever been as a Hurricane fan. We've never seen a loss that bad, I don't think, in our entire lives as Hurricane fans. We weren't around for the FAMU loss back in like 78 or something. So, I mean, this was like Better Duck said, it was not, I'm going to say program ending. I don't think the Canes aren't going anywhere. You know, we still picked up some good talent even after that loss, but it was a defining moment in Canes history to where like all of us understand now of where the program is. And it was terrible because like all of us knew the cracks in the program. I remember back in September, I tweeted out there's a culture problem here and I felt it. There's nothing the coaches can do to hide this from me. I see that there's a culture problem here, whether it's the kids not buying in, the kids not putting in 100%, the kids not listening to coaches. I'm not sure exactly what, but I see it on the field. I'm like, there's something going on here. And it started as the season progressed. And I was able to catch one of the games with Canes cast, Kev was actually sitting behind me. And I was telling him, man, I'm usually more hyped up than this, man, but there's nothing to be hyped up about this season. And I told him, normally I'm very hyped up. When you see me at a game, I'm going crazy, but I just don't have it in me because I understand that there's something culturally wrong here with this Hurricanes team. And until we can really just make major position changes, I don't think it's going to get fixed. So hopefully that we're in the midst of that right now.
No, for sure. And I'm the same way. And you and I were together in Orlando. You know, we were at the event with Michael Irvin, Reggie Wayne, and, you know, were there, Big Spade and Brad, and we were getting hyped. You know, we went over, met my dad, and day before, you know, the Florida game, we were going crazy. And then I came back to Florida and went to the Virginia Tech game, and I just remember sitting in the stands like, I have never felt like this dead at a Hurricanes game, and just watching them in general. I like when you're down 28-0, just the joy and the thrill of being at the game. It wasn't there, and that's something I haven't experienced. And going back to the culture thing, that's something that I've been very, very vocal about. I've written articles, I've tweeted. There's a total culture problem at the University of Miami, and it's been that way since maybe 05, 06. Do you think how much of that do you put on the players, and how much of that do you put on the coaches?
Well, it starts, and I know this sounds so cliche, but it starts at recruiting. You know, everyone's saying, oh, of course it starts at recruiting. But it's not just recruiting the stars on paper. Right now there's a running back. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a five-star, and there's schools that have turned away from him. Sometimes it's not worth the trade-off of bringing in a kid who, yeah, he's got the five-star talent, but is he a five-star locker room guy? Is he a five-star guy who's going to step up? We look at so much of when Ed Reed said that he was the guy that used to pick up the towels and make people put the towels in the bins, because it's just the little things like that that really set forth the character of how you're going to come together and do something. And it really, that's what I think, you have to find people like that. Like, you turn a locker room around from really, and like I said, it sounds so cliche, but it's from the eye and then turn it into a team, you know. But, you know, we haven't had a lot of those people in the team leaders step up. And it's one of the things I really admired about DJ Dallas. And we obviously haven't had good seasons. We had one good season with DJ, but DJ was very much of a leader type. And we need more of those type of characters inside the locker room.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe you'll touch on some of the same points, but the question that I wanted to ask you was, so say that I make you athletic director or coach or, you know, a board member, whatever it takes, like I give you total control of the program. What are some of the first things you do or some of the first things you address if we're trying to get our school back on the map?
Well, it's 2020. We just came off the worst year. So the first thing I would want to know is how bought in are the kids right now into the program? That is the million-dollar question. Coming off of one of the worst seasons in school history, how bought in are you? What is the vision? Do you believe in the vision? What can you do? I mean, I think that these conversations absolutely have to go on between the players and the coaches. What can you do to bring forth that vision? What can you do to expedite the process? You know, what can you do to help any kids that come in here be wowed and feel like they need to be part of this to go forward? Because a lot of the kids that are going on, and you know, I do a lot of edits, and I sometimes do edits for a lot of high school kids and you know, top talent. And a lot of what I'm hearing the rumblings are is they want to go to Miami, but they're just not sold on Miami. You know, they're not sold on a school that has the talent that could be so much more, and it's just not there. It's not getting there. So it's hard to bring in a kid and say, you can be the piece that turns this around, blah, 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 when you just haven't done it in the last two or three classes. Yeah. But so I want to know, how committed are the kids right now in that locker room to making the vision come true? So it starts with the kids you have on the deck right now, with the kids you have on the roster now, the kids you have on the practice team, the kids you have on the squad team, you know, and everything else. You ask them how committed they are. So.
No, that's a great point. I mean, I always reference back to those, you know, those Butch Davis years, like 98, 97, when they were going 5-6, but you know, those players like Ed Reed, Damian Lewis, Al Blades, you know, those are the guys that bought into what he was building. You know, it's hard to preach the new Miami, you know, everything's going to be so different. And then maybe, you know, obviously Manny was a little in over his head, but obviously the players weren't maybe totally bought in, but it sucks though, because you can see it right on the field. You know,
you can. And I thought, people, this is college football is a show me sport. It's always been a show me sport. Everybody, you're in an environment, college football's environment, where everybody talks a big game. Everybody sounds like Ric Flair. Everybody wants to be hyped. And it's the epitome of hype, college football, you know? But you have to back it up. And how well you do in recruiting, how well it's going to be, ties into how well your season goes. We're not going to get every kid from South Florida, because we never have. You know, some of the best players that came through the school were from Oklahoma, were from California, you know, but we can get the kids that want to be able to make a difference at the U. We need to be able to keep them here and sell them here. Like, you're going to be able to make that difference. So.
No, I mean, and that's why, you know, bro, like, and I'm from South Florida, and everyone is, and rightfully so, you know, South Florida has the most talent, but some of the greatest program changers for this university didn't come from South Florida. Ken Dorsey is not from South Florida. Bernie Kosar is not from South Florida. You know,
Ed Reed's New Orleans, dude.
Yeah, Ed Reed. I mean, like
DJ Williams.
DJ Williams. Yeah, exactly. Freaking, I love the, you know, the idea of winning the state of Miami in recruiting. What, going back to what you were talking about, James, what do you think needs to happen record-wise and other things-wise for Miami to maybe get back into the talk of landing some of these big-time recruits and moving forward?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. Despite everything that's happened, I think that we do have the right head coach in place. I know that's not a popular thing to say, and I'm not being a contrarian or anything like that. I do believe that, only because Manny is from down here. He understands the culture. And I'm sure he felt just as bad about being one of the worst, having one of the worst starts to a head coaching career in Miami than anybody. I mean, this guy has a reputation with the city, you know, through his father, through everything else. So obviously I don't think he envisioned starting his tenure at Miami this way. But we do have somebody that understands the culture and the expectations, and Manny Diaz. So I think that that's a very good starting place for getting back to where we need to go. 9-3. I tell people it has to be 9-3, the minimum. Because at 9-3, and if those wins are impressive, you can sell the turnaround of a team. You can sell, you know, that. Yes, I understand the season wasn't against the Alabamas and LSUs of the world, but you do see the team coming together. You do see everybody having fun again. You do see everybody winning again and pushing themselves. And now you got more rumblings of more NFL players being, you know, being brought out of these kids. So that's what I think a good season will do for us. You start getting people with NFL grades. You start getting people with you know, rumblings of what round they might go. And that's what brings back the excitement in college football.
No, and I, dude, I come, and you and I agree on almost everything. I say 9-3 as well, and so many people are saying, well, that's so unacceptable, and you know, we should be pressing for 11-1, and you know, and like when people like us say, you know, we're not at the Alabama or LSU, you know, people get offended, but at a certain point, you know, Canes fans and sports fans in general have to get over their sometimes months. Yeah, exactly, and sometimes delusional thoughts that, you know what, this isn't 2002, this isn't 2003, we can't just trot out there and go 11-2 and go 11-1. Like, this is a process. If we were to go 9-3 and, you know, beat Florida State, beat North Carolina, beat Michigan State, maybe that would be, people don't realize how huge going 9-3, potentially 10-4 with a bowl game victory, people don't realize how huge that would be for the program. I mean, just think about Mark Richt's first year when we went, I mean, we started off like 9-4, but we rattled off 5 straight wins, win a bowl game. I mean, we finished 9-4, but there was so much optimism and positivity surrounding the program that it's not going to take a national championship to say, okay, like Miami is like, like we can finally start talking about the Hurricanes again. You know, this program is actually going on the right track. It's not going to take a national championship for that. And I try and tell people this all the time. And you know,
very unique perspective of the program, being someone your age, because at your age I was a very different type of fan. But I mean, I tell people I'm not here to confirm biases. I'm here to challenge them. Why? Because I think you get a very more of an appreciation of the point of view of where we're at doing that. You know, I understand. I love the Canes. I don't have to be someone that tells people I love the Canes, because my actions every day, I walk out of that house, I dress in Canes gear. I try to invest as much time showing my appreciation by making wallpapers or edits. I love this Canes, bro. And that's my favorite team. But at the same time, no, you can't wrap yourself in delusions. 9-3 is actually very acceptable. It's where we need to be in a season like this. We don't have a complete team that's played together and has that camaraderie yet. So let it build up a season like this. And a season like 10-3, can take us. I don't know what the expectations are opening up against Alabama, but we'll know once this 10-4 or a 9-3 season, you know, we'll know. We'll know off a season like that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of that game, just looking forward, I wish that we'd have a little more experience of a quarterback when we get to that point. I mean, I guess N'Kozy Perry will have another year and could be
But that's why it was important for Derek King to lay down the challenge now and make people better around him. That's why we have an entire year and some change to get ready for that game. And we're going to have Derek King around here for at least another, 8-9 months?
Yeah.
So, yeah, let him make all the other quarterbacks better. Let the quarterbacks understand the system. It's crazy that we've had 3 offensive coordinators in 3 years. I mean, that doesn't help either. But like I said, let's hope that this system is the one that resonates best with the players and they can make something out of it heading into Alabama opening games.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what, before that, you know, just take it one game at a time, freaking do it the Patriot way. Like Bill Belichick always says, just one game at a time. Let me ask you this, James, who are a few players that you have in mind that you're expecting the most from that, that this is a make or break kind of a year?
Pope. Pope, Mark Pope, man. Let me tell you, we have so much hype behind Mark Pope.
I was thinking that, and I'm glad that you said that.
Mark Pope had so much hype behind him in his high school years, and rightfully so. He's not somebody that didn't deserve that hype. But, I mean, I would like to see more production from someone like Pope. It's not all 100% his fault. But very much Mark Pope would have to be one of the people at the top of that list. Absolutely. Zach McLeod is there. He opted to stay an extra year. And, well, let's see what he's got with that extra year, what he makes of it. I'm glad we have a seniority in the linebacker position. We need it. We also, I feel like we needed a change of linebacker position. I'm glad that we're going to get some new blood in there. And, you know, we can make something out of that as well. And that's definitely another one of the names. Navon Donaldson is another name that I think that absolutely has to be stepped up this year. Yeah. So, I mean, those are three big names, I believe, right there. I think the Gregory Russos are going to show up of the world. The I forgot his name, the Temple transfer. What was the name?
Yeah.
Yes. I think that these guys are going to show up no matter what. I think that they're anxious to go out there and do what they have to do. But a lot of guys that I'm expecting from would probably be those three names.
I love it, man. Sorry, I'm just blank here. My phone's been blowing up. So you are happy with Manny moving forward and so say we go 8-4, you know, are you ready to bail on Manny or would you elaborate a little more on that?
It would depend on what that 8-4 looked like. It would depend what the four losses looked like. It would depend if the team gave up on him, because an 8-4 hard fought 8-4, but we don't have the camaraderie, but it's getting there, is it different than an 8-4 where the team just gives up on? And I know that sounds very moral victory type speech and all that, and I'm not into that. But I mean, you just don't throw the baby out with the bathwater from the season like last season. And I understand why the move wasn't made. Everybody wanted Manny fired. Everybody wanted these things to happen. And I'm like, we just can't be rotating head coaches every year, bro. We're not building anything. You're not building anything. It took Clemson how many years to get to where they're at? Clemson, it took 7-8 years.
Yeah.
I
mean, for a long time, there Clemsoning was a thing, you know, like the blowing big games or, you know, not living up to expectations. That was Clemsoning. And now Clemsoning is being the best program in the country. So, I mean, you're right. It takes time and patience with a head coach that just has a good feel for the program. And you know, what you said about how it looks and giving up on the program, I noticed that our teams have really had a propensity for that. You know, we tend to go on losing streaks. Rather than dropping a game here or there, we'll lose to FSU, and then we always drop two or three games right after.
I believe some of that has to be on the coaches. And I know nobody wants to hear that in the coaching staff, but you have to make sure that the kids understand that, yes, it's a big game, but it's not the game. It's just, you know, if you're the Miami Hurricanes, our standard is championships. Our standard is not beating FSU every year. That should be without saying. Our standard is championships here.
Yeah.
So yeah, FSU is another game on the way there. And don't get caught up in the bright lights, because I've seen a lot of players, sometimes they might tweet out like, oh, I'm a little nervous about tomorrow, or I got butterflies. No, it shouldn't be that. Butterflies, no. Go out there and kill everybody. You know, and I don't mean that obviously literally, but go out there and have the game of your life on a stage like FSU, because really the standard is championships. And everyone's going to be like, well, you know, you're one of these old school fans that they got spoiled by watching the 2001 team and the 91 team. And yeah, listen, I understand that. I understand the national championships are very rare. But right now, I don't even want to sound like I'm settling. Right now, what I want to see is at least a Miami Hurricanes team ready to compete on that stage again. And we're not there.
I'm with you, man. I just want to see some fight. I want to see us lose a game this year and then come back the next week and just grind out a tough loss. Or, I mean, a tough win. Sorry. You know what I'm saying? I'm tired of those losing streaks. If we lose to FSU this year, which is not going to happen because we're not pansies like they are. But if, you know, say we do lose a rivalry game, like I want to see us come back the next week and just obliterate whoever we play. I'm tired of this, you know, letting one game turn into a three-game losing streak. It's Bush League, and you know,
it shouldn't be Miami. It's not a Miami standard. And that's why you got a lot of guys like, you know, I love Better Duck, but that's why you have people like Better Duck who remind people that what you're seeing now would never be acceptable in the realm of what Miami was in the 90s and the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think Better Duck's message is. Everybody has a little Better Duck in them. I know this guy is the most hated guy on Twitter, whatever. And I get the how he can get on people's nerves, but he's a reminder of, I know a lot of people that act just like that when it comes down to Miami. And they're not wrong. They're not wrong.
Well, I mean, hey, and Jordan and I, we love Duck. He's been on the podcast. I've always loved Duck just because he's honest. He's an honest hurt. Like, he's brutally honest, but like, he's just telling you how it is, like, and what the state of the program is. And, you know, when some people don't want to look at what the reality is, I mean, you have to realize that you have literally hit rock bottom going 6-7, losing to FIU, Duke, Louisiana Tech, Georgia Tech at home. Like, you have to realize where you are, like, to.
What, I mean, let's think about this. What do you think would have happened if Al Blade Sr., Nate Webster, some of these guys, these teams would have lost to FIU and they have to answer to these guys? You think these guys would have, I don't even think they would, it wouldn't have been acceptable under their watch. Because that's not something that's acceptable from the time we came in 79-80, and we changed the face of college football. Something like that has never been acceptable.
Yeah.
So that's Better Duck's message, is that's not acceptable. It shouldn't be acceptable. Yeah, and he's right about. And I get that. Duck's message is one thing summed up. Medicine doesn't taste good. It's not supposed to taste good. It doesn't taste good. I get that. You know, sometimes I get that he's, you know, beating a horse into ashes and beyond. But that, every fan that I know that's from the old school, it has a little Better Duck in him, or is a Better Duck. So.
No, and that's a great point. I wrote an article for State of the U a few weeks ago, how this losing mindset just has to leave Miami. And I got some backlash from it, saying that I'm a negative fan. I mean, I've gotten that a lot, but and everything like that. But I mean, I'd rather be like just completely honest, give a full honest assessment of the program, point out the flaws, and let's work on them. Let's not live in this fairy tale land that, you know, we're back at the Orange Bowl and Dorsey's under center. Like, it's not those times. Like, we can be honest about the Hurricanes. Like, I'm very honest when it comes to the Hurricanes. Like, they've let me down like my whole life. And and honestly, like, I'm gonna tell my dad that you complimented me on how I have an old fan mentality. That was one of the best comments I've gotten recently.
you have to be able to remove yourself from your bias. If you love your team, you have to understand that. And I'm not saying to go out there and fire everybody. And there was a time where we almost didn't see the change I was looking for. And I was saying, you know what? It might be time to go ahead and hit that button, because there's no way we can go through another year of what we just saw without any changes. Because then that wouldn't be fair. That wouldn't be fair to the fans. So yeah, I did call on for some firings. I did call on for that. And I said, let things change. And guess what? They responded to and then, like I said, this is not popular, but to Blake James' credit, they brought on board Ed Reed. They brought on board the number two safety in the entire United States. We got Derek King. The changes were made. Now they have to be able to translate into wins. And that's one of the main things I've expressed this upcoming season. It has to translate. It absolutely has to translate.
Yeah, James, I really liked what you said about the accountability and, you know, having some of these old school Canes and you know, like guys like Ed Reed and Al Blades, you know, holding people accountable. I mean, just imagine for a second losing to FIU, knowing that I'm going to throw him under the bus again, knowing that Jaren Williams was out past curfew. And then he goes to the media and says, we went through the motions and we have the worst loss in program history. I mean, I can't even imagine what the backlash would be in the locker room for some of these.
Well, that's part of the culture and the characterization of the team, where back then you'd have people that would make the sacrifices of not going out late to win on game day. Then to celebrate game day, you go out that night. You know, that's how these guys would do it. But they would never put in danger. And like, I don't know if you saw the U documentary, sometimes you couldn't put in danger the efforts of winning, because then you might get beat up. You might get thrown into the U. This is how people would scrap it out. I understand it's a different culture now. Things obviously have changed for the better, for the worse. That's up to you to decide. And things are not done that way anymore. But you have to still have, you know, Ohio State doesn't do things that way, but they still have a ton of accountability. You know, yeah. Bama doesn't do things that way. They still got a ton of accountability. It starts, and what I've noticed also with a lot of these head coaches is they make these, almost want to say paramilitary leadership grades inside every single class. Like, you got your linebacker leader, who has perks and he earned his way up and now he's the one overseeing the linebackers. You got your cornerback leaders, you got your wide receivers. You always got that one guy who he's the guy who I don't want to say he's a shot caller there, but he's the one with seniority. And it doesn't take being there a long time to have seniority. It just takes, you know, being at least being able to play at a seniority level, even if you're like the second or third year guy. And a lot of these guys have implemented a system like that. So I want to see something like that get implemented just for, you know, to have people hold people responsible for their duties.
Well, no, and absolutely. And, you know, you see guys like Michael Irvin, you see all these alumni come back and they're so passionate about the program because, I mean, they put in so much work just to establish the program at all. I mean, they were grinding out there on Green Tree just trying to make a name for Miami. And, you know, when they see this standard and tradition not upheld and players half-assing it, you know, going out past curfew. I won't just single out Jaren. There's a ton of players.
It's a culture. It's a culture problem. I just call it what it is. It's a culture problem.
It's being okay with winning is what it is.
Yeah.
Nobody holds you to your standard. That's the problem with Miami. That's always been. Nobody holds you to the Miami standard. Those kids don't even know what the Miami standard is. It's been so far removed for so long. That's why when you get an Ed Reed in there, it's a good reminder of what that Miami standard was.
Yeah.
But if a kid doesn't know the Miami standard, oh, college is fun. I'm just going to go ahead and do this and that, blah, blah, blah. Go out, 7, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., who cares, you know? Roberts, party city, party, whatever. These people found a way to be able to put all their wants and vices aside, to be able to come to the city of Miami, where that's not easy to do, and win a championship. That's why I tell people our championships are even more special because of that.
Yeah. No,
it takes a very special kind of person to be able to come down here, play football at this level, and win, and put all your wants and vices aside.
So. Yeah, no, it absolutely does. And to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, like, I know I singled out Jaren, but, you know, the fact that he started the rest of the games, like, that just shows that it's an entire culture. It's not a player. You know, I was trying to make that point. Maybe I wasn't super clear. Yeah.
No, you're right. Yeah.
You know, he started the rest of the games. And the point I was trying to make was if he's on that 2001 team and that happens, there's no way he sees the field ever again. I'm sure the players would have revolted, you know. But the fact that the season played out the way it did just shows that it goes so deep. And you know, it's across the coaching staff, the board of trustees, the athletic director, the whole roster. I mean, there's just nobody's holding themselves to the same standard that the fans have been.
Third and 18. Let's talk about third and 18 real quick. That right there summed up the entire season.
Oh,
I mean, bro, is there a better way to sum up what we saw last year than the third and 18 play?
Yeah, no, it's exactly.
Can we make that stop and win in Chapel Hill? I mean, Dan Enos still might be our offensive coordinator.
Oh, my God. Third and 18, bro. And you know what sucks? I think I tweeted. Everyone called me a jinx. I'm like, I know how this ends, man. This college football.
That's how I view football now, just because I've been tormented. But, James, thank you so much for coming on, brother. You are welcome anytime on the show. Looking forward to linking up with you down in Hollywood next month, right?
All right, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to some podcast gear, man, some Fours Up podcast gear. So hopefully you launch the store soon.
Hell yeah. And my dad also says hello, James, so wanted to.
Awesome, man. You guys take care, stay safe out there, and be blessed for sure.
Hey, thanks, James. It's good having you on, brother.
All love.
Anytime. Go Canes. Later.
Go Canes. All right, that's awesome, man.
I'm gonna make a very bold, and I've said this all probably like 10 to 15 times. This is probably my favorite episode yet.
Yeah, dude, this has been a good episode. And sorry I drew a blank earlier. I think I've gotten probably 130 text messages since we started recording an hour ago. So,
it's
awesome, man. I don't know what's going on.
No, yeah, dude, we need to have James on again. Dude, that I can't wait for you to meet him. He's one of my favorite people when it comes to Canes fans. And
let's send him that invite to Villa Rose when we go.
Bro, absolutely, absolutely, hell yes we are. But yeah, I'm just having fun right now. Like, this is just awesome.
Hey, so let's so we got our next guest coming up, but let's take a break for real quick and eat some dinner, and then when our guest is ready, we can we'll jump back on and start again.
All right, sounds good. I have to go put my contact back in that fell out.
I gotta go restock up on Mountain Dew and hurry and scarf down some vegetables and some boiled chicken or whatever the crap I'm having tonight.
Hell yeah. All right, we'll be back.
Okay. All right, we're from our break. Sorry about that. Just had some time conflicts between a few of our guests, and you know, I had to eat some dinner real quick, but it's good stuff. How you doing, Marsh?
You know, I am, from the 30 minutes ago that we were talking, I am doing just very, very well, and we are about to end this episode, this great episode, on a great note. We have our third guest coming on. We got John Michaels coming on, so let's get him. Let's ring him up, Jordan.
All right, calling him now.
Hello. Hello. What's up,
John? What's how you doing, brother? John?
What's up, man? Doing good. How you guys doing?
Pretty good, man. So we now welcome on a friend of mine and just a good guy on the timeline. He's a pretty much a celebrity. We got John Michaels joining us right now on the Forza podcast. He's a host for SB Nation Radio, host on 680 The Fan in Atlanta. He's also a writer for State of View, like me. John, thank you so much for coming on the show on such short notice.
Oh, anytime. I figured, look, we're quarantined. We can't go outside. I joke because I just got home from the gym. But I figured with all this going on, what better place to go? I told you from day one, man, your podcast was really well done. I enjoyed it. And I said, you know what? Let's grace the airwaves with some good Canes talk here on a Thursday night.
Hell yes. I love it, bro. I love it. Well, let's get into Canes, man. You and I we met briefly at the Miami, Florida Friday night party or whatever like that. But, you know, everyone knows you. You know, you're a big Canes fan, and, you know, you've supported the program for a long time. Spring practice, or week one of spring practice, just wrapped up. No idea when the hell week two will be. But what were your thoughts, some of the takeaways you had from week one at Green Tree?
I mean, you know, it's tough to, and I get into this all the time with people, it's tough to really disseminate a huge amount from spring practice because, you know, we're always going to hear the good side of things. But what I liked more than anything, and not to buy in and go crazy and bananas, was the fact that for the first time in a long time, it seems like there was accountability, but there was continuity on the staff. I never felt that way last year, even when they hired Dan Enos, that there was true continuity between what Dan Enos wanted to do and what Manny Diaz was trying to accomplish. Because I think back to Manny's statement when they were looking for an offensive coordinator, what about a calendar year ago? I guess a little more than a calendar year ago now. And he said, I want to be cutting edge. I want to be innovative. And then you watch Dan Enos's antiquated, awful, slow pace, 1975 pro style offense. And I said, this isn't cutting edge and this isn't innovative. So I, you know, and I was a guy that banged on Manny a lot. People have probably heard me on Hockman and Crowder a bunch on 560 throughout the year. And I crapped on Manny because I thought what he did last year was horrible. And it didn't look like the Miami program I grew up with. But what you see in spring practice, or at least what we've heard in some of the videos, he brought in like-minded individuals. Garen Justice on the offensive line sounds like a coach that's going to get the best out of these kids. Rhett Lashley, we should have been running this offense for a decade. You know, the fact that the University of Miami has waited till 2020 to go up-tempo spread in an era of 7-on-7 football, in an era of speed. I mean, it's always been an era of speed. I grew up in South Florida. I know what that speed's all about. And we're just now doing that in 2020. I hated that we went 6-7 a year ago. Trust me, I was devastated at the Florida game. I was, you know, distraught after the FIU game, the Louisiana Tech game. I didn't even take off work because I didn't give a damn about the game. But I come into now and I go, let's get this stupid virus out of the way because I'm ready to kick Temple's ass in about 3 or 4 months.
Let's go!
Yeah, me too, man. Me too. We got some we got ties to Temple now, you know, with Manny Diaz, their former coach. You know, Coach Feely's one of their former coaches, Quincy Roche. there's going to be some hype around the game, and really we just need to go out there and mop the floor with them. I mean, we should.
You know, I try not to get into, and even Old Takes Exposed a year ago got me, because I put my predictions, you know, on my Twitter page at John Michaels U. I have no shame in making predictions, you know, in saying exactly what's on my mind. I don't give a damn about anybody out there other than my wife and my kids and a few of the people I'm closest with. So I'll talk trash about Miami the entire time. But I thought last year I looked at that schedule and go, that's 11-1. We'll slip somewhere because I didn't think they were good enough to go undefeated, but the schedule was trash. You look at the schedule this year, I think the three of us could get out there and line up at X, Z, and maybe one of us in the backfield and go win 9 or 10 games. Like, this schedule is horrible. So I'm starting to feel it again. I've already bought my season tickets. I was really trepidatious about buying season tickets. But, man, I'm all in. How can I not be? April 2nd, I have another tattoo scheduled. I'm getting – and I forgot who made the tattoo or made the video – not the video, just the GIF and the picture that's got Sebastian wearing the 305 chain. Oh, that's going on my right calf right above my U tattoo. I said, I'm back in. I'm 100% cocky Canes fan again, and it's only, what, March 12th? I'm ready to go.
Bro, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. You can't be like, yeah, like I was pissed off and mopey ass like after Louisiana Tech game, after the FIU game. But like once we hire Rhett Lashley, once we get some things going, what's the point in just being that typical depressed and negative Canes fan? Like, we should be excited about this team, and we have every reason to be excited about this team. We got our offensive coordinator, we got our quarterback. What are your thoughts on De'Aaron King?
You know, it's funny, SB Nation originates out of Houston, so my producer on my nightly radio show is in Houston. He's a University of Houston grad. He just graduated like 3 years ago, so he's a younger guy. So he was there when Rhett Lashley went crazy a couple of years ago. Or not Rhett Lashley, excuse me, De'Aaron King went crazy a couple of years ago. So I've asked him, I said, what are we getting in De'Aaron King? He goes, dude, that'll be the best quarterback y'all have had in 20 years. He goes, De'Aaron can ball. He goes, think about it. First of all, he throws the ball really well. And people are going to look at his size, and he's probably closer to 5'9 than he is 5'11. But it doesn't matter. Because of his feet, DNs and D tackles can't just roar up the field and think, oh, we're going to get him. Because if you miss him, he steps up in the pocket and he's 20 yards downfield outrunning some of your linebackers and your defensive backs. I'm jacked that we have a quarterback. You know, I really wanted Jaron to succeed. Jaron actually went to high school 5 minutes from my house. Like, we're like two blocks from his school district. I know his high school coach really well. I had him on my radio show here in Atlanta multiple times. He told me Jaron was the dude. And we saw glimpses, obviously, against Louisville and at Florida State that he could be the dude. Whatever happened down there in between the years for Jaron Williams just didn't work. I think part of it, Dan Enos was an ass clown, and he had to deal with that idiot day in and day out. But now you've got a guy that wants to prove everybody wrong in De'Aaron King. And what I really like about him, he wasn't playing with five-star talent every year, yet they'd play Oklahoma, and King would put up 300 yards passing, 100 yards rushing, and 4 touchdowns. What the hell is he going to do to Georgia Tech and Duke and all the candy-ass teams we have in the ACC? He should roll up some big points with them.
Bro, and after that Oklahoma game, oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank. What's the Sooners head coach name?
Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley said after that game, and Oklahoma won by 30, but he said there's not 5 quarterbacks in the country that are better than De'Aaron King. And, like, just like what you're saying, man, if we this schedule and De'Aaron King's talent with our playmakers, I've been saying this, and you kind of just hinted towards it. I really think that we're about to see numbers put up by a Miami Hurricanes quarterback that, you know, with his dual threat ability, I don't think we've ever seen at Miami. And that might be a little far-fetched, but, hey, I love the odds, and I love De'Aaron King as our quarterback.
We've never had a true dual threat quarterback. Ja'Cory could move a little bit, but he was a pocket passer. Stephen Morris could move a little bit. He was a pocket passer. You know, Brock Berlin could move a hair. He was a pocket passer. I'm trying to think of some of the, you know, Kirby Freeman could move. He could run. He couldn't throw worth a damn.
He wasn't good.
No, he just wasn't good. You know, everybody else we've trotted out there, Brad Kaya was a statue back there. Malik Rozier could run. He just couldn't throw. Nikosi Perry can run. It doesn't seem like they want him to run. So now you have a guy that I think is going to give a dimension that we've never had. And, you know, the offense is simplified, and I think guys are going to be in better shape. And watching some of the schemes that Dan Enos put together a year ago for the O-line, they had no chance of success. You've got your guard trying to kick out and get a defensive end who's in a wide nine technique. Our guards were kind of hefty and out of shape. I'm going to call it like it is. You're not getting out there to make that block. You got a true freshman offensive tackle in Zion Nelson who had zero business being our starting left tackle, but you put him on an island against Florida, and Florida was laughing. You know, we were both at that game. Florida's looking like, we can tee off and get this guy anytime we want. And then I think what ended up happening throughout last year that becomes the most frustrating is I saw a team quit. And I've seen that, unfortunately, in the Canes a lot over the past 15 years. When the going gets tough, they fold like a cheap tent. And Miami, like I said, the Miami I grew up with, they'd be down 17, and I'd know good and damn well we were coming back to whoop your ass. Now, if they're down 7 early in the game, I go, uh-oh, we're in trouble. This is going to go from 7 to 21 quickly. So if there's something that Manny needs to work on this offseason outside of schematics and everything else, he's got to get the psyche back of Miami. And, Marsh, it may have been you that wrote it that said Miami has to stop with this losing attitude. I couldn't agree more. There is a loser mentality down there that has to go away.
Yeah, I feel like along with kind of a loser mentality, we also got like a participation trophy mentality kind of going. I mean, after a horrible year, we do all those antics with wrestling dummies, and we have our wrestling night or whatever the hell that was, and then we do the yacht thing, we roll up on Florida State and you know, crash their camp, and then, you know, we did nothing, and then our guys are bragging about it on Instagram after, you know, like, that's a participation trophy mentality, where it's like, we're here, you know, we wear a U on our helmet, there's a lot of history, like, I'm just happy to be here, you know, that, I can't.
And I was going to say, that's the biggest problem. The guys that were there before were scared crapless of not having a job. So they knew, I better work as hard as I possibly can, or I'm not getting on the field. My high school teammate played at Miami from 92 to 94 and never was a starter and never could become a starter. And he actually left early and went to the CFL and became a really quality kick returner there. But that competition was completely different. You're spot on with the participation thing. I used to go off with Hockman and Crowder, and those are my guys. I love them. Two of the funniest dudes you'll ever meet and talk to, and their radio show is fantastic. And I've always thanked them for giving me a voice with Miami, because up here they like to neuter me because it's dog country and it's Georgia Tech country. And I tell these yahoos, win a national title or shut the hell up. Stop talking to me about, you know, coming close to Alabama. But not only is it the yacht thing, not only is it the tackling dummy, the touchdown rings, while the chain was cool and innovative, and it helped us go 10-0 to start the 2017 season, and it had a mystique about it. Once you changed it two different times and you had new iterations of it, it became less special. Now you put these touchdown rings, which in theory should be great, but you're not scoring points. And the indelible moment for me a year ago, they were down, 28-0 to Virginia Tech when Nikosi hits Mark Pope with the Hail Mary?
Yeah.
And you have Pope and Perry sprinting to the sideline to put on touchdown rings. And you're down 28-7, and the only thing you've done all first half is hit a Hail Mary. Then you have guys getting player of the game trophies and plaques after they lose. I see Jaron Williams, after you just lost to North Carolina, posting player of the game plaque. That's another issue Manny has. Cut all the Mickey Mouse BS. Get back to winning football games. Have accountability where you miss a practice, you don't play. You want to transfer and put your name in the portal? Get your ass off my campus and don't ever come back. So I'm telling you, nothing against Cleveland Reed. There's no chance that guy would be on my football team. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, if you hit the portal, best of luck. But, we're moving on. And, I don't even want to sound off on that topic. But
I hope the touchdown rings are gone, man. Touching back on – what we were saying, I think the pictures of Sheldrick Redwine and Malik Young, you know, like wearing the chain and the gifts and stuff, like those Like, those kind of became a pop culture icon for college football. And I think that's what these kids are obsessed with now, is they're thinking, like, you know, they're thinking that they're going to – their image will be some hit on Reddit or Twitter that, you know, they'll kind of be immortalized through these pictures and through the Instagram stuff. Not for what they do on the field, just for the fact that they're wearing these rings and this necklace. And I agree with you that it's lost its effectiveness and its luster. And I hope we get rid of everything. I mean, if we just went back to the original chain, I'd be fine with that. I hope we don't have a new one. I never want to see the touchdown rings again. I'm just kind of over the gimmick stuff. And I mean,
here's the thing. Gimmicks are great when you're winning. I still have on DVR, and Lord knows we're not going to have sports for probably 3 weeks, 3 months. Who knows when the next time we're actually going to have live sports. I've still got the Notre Dame game on my DVR. And anytime I have a bad day, you know what? I go back and I put that on. And I think of Trajan Bandy all the time running for the touchdown and Chris Fowler going, break out the chain again. And they actually on the ABC broadcast had put a little graphic that said turnover chain recipient. And they had the player's name. And I'm thinking to myself, like, how damn cool is that, that Miami once again has changed and innovated college football? But it was cool because we were winning and we were back in the top five. And I was at the ACC title game. We got a fumble recovery early in the game, and all the Miami fans at once were taking our chains off. We're holding them up. The Clemson fans are like, oh, God, not this stupid damn chain. Like, you know the power of the turnover chain. Then you go 7-6, the chain doesn't seem quite as cool. Although it had moments in 18, you know, the Florida State game when Michael Pinckney gets the interception, they had the strip sack fumble on Frenchie Francois, and the place goes bananas. The chain had an aura. There wasn't a moment last year that the turnover chain came out and I felt that it did anything. And I believe in everything you guys are saying. It's not only a Miami problem. Part of it is, I call it the Instagram society. We're all so worried about likes, and I've got a teenage daughter that deals with the same thing. Oh my God, 20 people viewed my video. Who gives a damn? I told her, I said, I've got 17, 18,000 followers. I know probably 300 of them. The rest of them are nameless, faceless, you know, Instagram gifs or Instagram pictures or Twitter pictures. I don't know these people. I don't care if they like my post or not. I do it because of the line of work I'm in. Miami players were too worried about running to their phone after losing a game going, don't be a fan later. I hate to tell you, homie, I've been a fan since while your dad was a young kid. I'm always going to be a fan no matter the name on the back of the jersey. I cheer for the U on the helmet, and I support the program.
And honestly, bro, you could not have said it better. I mean, and you're an older – I mean, you've been around the Canes longer than I have, and I feel that way. I feel like – I mean, I've only been a fan since I was seven, around like 2001, 2002, but like – I'm kind of sick of this whole this crap, dude. But I wanted to ask you this, John, because you are in Atlanta. You're in SEC country, and I used to live. I've lived in Tallahassee. I lived in the Panhandle in Alabama, and I have great respect for the SEC. I have great respect for Nick Saban. I also love what Dabo Sweeney has done. What do you think they've done specifically? Because they both took over, you know, terrible programs. Alabama was nothing when Nick Saban got there. What do you think those coaches did specifically to turn around their programs, and what can Manny learn from that?
For Nick Saban, it was simple. He had the backing of a program that was willing to spend whatever money they wanted to put the facilities and the infrastructure in place. And Saban already had a name because he had won a national championship at LSU. He had gone to the NFL, even though he screwed over the Dolphins and lied in their face. He still had a name and cachet, and Alabama was just waiting. And I love to do this to Bama fans. Bama fans right now, and they should be on top of the world. They've won, what, 5 national titles in the last 15 years, whatever it is. They're on an unbelievable run. It's probably 5-11. They forget the Mike Price, Mike DuBose, Mike Shula, Dennis Franchione, Ray Perkins. They love to just go, we went from Bear Bryant to Nick Saban and forget like a 30-year stretch. Save a couple of years with Gene Stallings when they were a mediocre program. There were years Alabama went 3-9, but what Nick Saban did specifically, he got the money backing and he said, we're going to do it my way. He got the best players because A, they had an unbelievable recruiting budget. Their facilities are insane. Like, it's otherworldly. what they have, you know, and I've been to Georgia's campus a bunch. Their facilities are otherworldly. What Clemson did is they got the right guy at the right time. And I can tell you, I was doing radio in Atlanta when they hired Dabo Swinney. And me and my co-host were like, this is a joke. You're hiring a wide receiver coach with no head coaching experience off of the staff that just got fired. Where have we seen that before, where you hire an assistant from the staff that gets let go? And they gave Dabo time. But what Dabo did best is he trusted his assistants. When he got his ass whooped in the Orange Bowl, 70-33 by West Virginia, they realized, okay, we may have the offense with Chad Morris to keep up with a lot of people, but our defense is brutal. And the school backed him and said, you spend whatever you want. And they went and bought the highest paid assistant they could get in Brent Venables. Jeff Scott, if I'm not mistaken, is the first major coordinator from Clemson to leave since Dabo Swinney's been there. I think he let one go, but Scott and Chad Morris had left to go be a head coach, but it had been Scott, Elliott, and Brent Venables for the better part of 7 or 8 years. The continuity on that staff makes it real easy. Nick Saban has the name in Alabama where kids just go, all right, I'm going to Bama. They've won forever. You know, I'll be the seventh string linebacker and eventually get my turn. Clemson's done it with continuity, and I'll be honest, I've been to Clemson games. It's just like an SEC school. It's in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing else to do, but they live and breathe Clemson purple and orange. What Miami needs to get back to, A, you got to win some games, and then they've got to have the ability to keep people on campus, not just coaches. We got to stop having juniors leave to go be sixth and seventh round picks. That's a dilemma that's been going on now for 12, 14 years. And it's a reason why we can never have those senior offensive linemen, why we can never have senior tight ends and wide receivers. All our guys leave.
Yeah. I think winning will help with that. Cause I mean, we've kind of picked on a few guys, you know, at the time, Brad Kaya's decision seemed a little funny, and we've talked about that, and we love Brad. But, you know, that decision seemed funny. This Trajan Bandy decision seems funny. The Kendrick Norton and RJ McIntosh. You know, but the thing was, if we're an elite program and we're winning and we're contending for a title every year, those kids won't leave because they'll think, would I rather be a seventh-round pick or would I rather get a national championship ring or at least be playing for one? And then also your other point about the keeping coordinators intact, I think we're going to have the opportunity for Manny to prove that. I think Rhett Lashley is definitely going to get some head coaching love here in the next few years. He's just been extremely productive at every stop. And then, you know, Blake Baker got a lot of heat from our fans, but quietly had a really good season and, you know, was getting a look from I think it was LSU. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it is time to put our money where our mouth is and show Rhett Lashley, you know, with the finances that it's better to be here and be the offensive coordinator for Miami than to, you know, go be a head coach at a lesser school. We need to build value in ourselves, and we're not doing that with coaches or players.
No, and, you know, I don't get mad at guys like Bandy that have financial situations and have to leave. What I do get mad at is guys that get bad, you know, bad advice. Like Tommy Streeter left to be a fifth-round pick. Brandon Washington, who could have been a good senior all-ACC-type guard, left to be a sixth-round pick. I worked in the NFL for almost a decade and got to travel with a team and be around a team forever. And it's tough because what people don't feel or what they fail to realize is the business of that league is as cutthroat as anything in the history of the world. You're here today as a piece of meat and an entity for that team, and you're gone tomorrow. If you're not good enough to make it, they don't give a damn about cutting you and never seeing you again. And that's what we've got to get that message to some of our kids. I don't know where it's been lost. I don't know if it's these kids are tired of losing, which I know I would be. I don't know if a lot of people look at, hey, I'm just going to go to Miami for my 3 years and get to the league. We need more people like Shaq Quarterman and Michael Pinckney to stay for a fourth year. And hopefully that culture, you know, I mean, think about it. We had Ed Reed and Clinton Portis stay an extra year and Jeremy Shockey. You want to know why that was the greatest team in the history of college football? Because guys like that stuck around. Bryant McKinney, they stuck around for their final year. We got guys leaving now to go be free agents in the league. That mentality has to change.
Well, and also, you know, guys like Ed Reed and you know, Clinton Portis, Joaquin Gonzalez, Brian McKinney, they all came back for 2001, not just because they could win a championship, but they had a certain pride about the University of Miami that I just don't think is there right now. I'm very optimistic about 2020, but I mean, you have to, it has to be more than just winning to return for your senior year, in my opinion. And that standard that Miami used to have and that I grew up knowing, it's just not there. And what do you think, John, who were some of the players that, I mean, we have guys like De'Aaron King, Brevin Jordan, Rousseau, guys that we know will do their job on Saturday. Who are some of the guys, give me two to three guys who you, it's like a make it or break it year for them.
Oh, DJ Ivy is number one for me. I think Al Blades got a lot of crap last year unjustly. I thought he did a really good job at corner. DJ Ivy has all the tools to be a really good defensive end. I'm not talking All-American. He could absolutely be first or second team All-ACC. I saw just lack of giving a damn a lot of times. I always will have that mental picture of the Georgia Tech play. Georgia Tech is awful. I mean, and I love Jeff Collins, great dude. I've had a chance to hang out with him. But they're awful. They have no talent, or at least this past year they didn't. Everybody in the stadium knew they were going to fake that punt. And DJ Ivy just stood there and watched the guy run by him. And he didn't seem like he gave a damn. So I think for him it's a huge season to step up and show what he can do. You got a couple of young kids in Tecori Couch and Christian Williams that could push him for playing time. Obviously, they're going to start to recruit a little bit better. At least I'd like to think so, and bring in some other young guys. But I think DJ Ivy's number one for me. Number two is Nesta Silvera. Now, I love his attitude. I love the fact that he's, you know, a trash talker. He's a throwback to old school Miami. It's year three. It's time to take all of that bravado and make it work on the field. I need Nesta Silvera. I'm not saying be Warren Sapp, because Warren Sapp's a Hall of Famer. There's not a lot of people that are Warren Sapp. I need him to be at least R.J. McIntosh from 2017. Think about all the times McIntosh was in the backfield making plays. Didn't always have to be sacks, but it was getting the quarterback off his spot. It was making the running back bend so somebody else can get him in the – Chad Thomas can get him in the backfield. We don't have that. You know, beat Gerald Willis from 2 years ago. That's what Nesta Silvera has to be. He's the most talented interior guy that we have. And he doesn't have any pressure anymore. You've got Roche, Rousseau, and now you've got Jalen Phillips as well. You've got three monster ends. If I'm Ford, if I'm Silvera, if I'm Harrison Hunt, if I'm any of these young Jalar Hawley, if I'm any of those dudes, I should be eating this year. So that's number two. And number three for me, I don't know what his injury status is, but Navon Donaldson, and I called him out on the radio. He needs to get his ass. He needs to drop 30 pounds.
Yeah, I was just about to say he needs to get a little bit lighter if he's going to survive the offense.
He's playing at 360, 370. Your big ass needs to be at about 330. He was better as a true freshman than he is as a junior. Like, absolutely. This year for Navon Donaldson should be, I'm an All-American. Now, I know he's got a knee injury. He's got to find it, because I think in this offense, you just mentioned it, if he's not in shape, he won't play.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly. Nesta is a guy that I'm just like you. I love his old school mentality that he brings, but sooner or later, you know, after 3 years, that old school mentality, I mean, it becomes kind of pathetic when, you know, the FIU offensive line is manhandling you. But if he can stay injury free throughout 2020, I think he's in for a big year. Navon Donaldson, a guy that I think was a freshman All-American and then kind of just, I don't know if he digressed, but I feel like he just hasn't done much. He's huge. He's just a player that I don't know. I'm just, you know, just please block. And then DJ Ivy, I think he definitely, yeah, that Georgia Tech play, good God, that was embarrassing. Holy hell. But I think he improved a little bit towards the second half of the year. I love the duo of him and Blades Jr. I think Blades Jr. is going to be a star this year. I think he's going to have a really good season. I'm because we've asked some other people about this question, and I think you're the first one that hasn't brought up Mark Pope.
He's another guy. I mean, I you could go down the list of receivers. I was all in favor of bringing in two transfers because it's too much of the, hey, I was a 4-star. Hey, I was a 5-star. I don't give a damn. You haven't done a damn thing at Miami. What you did at Central or Southridge or, you know, wherever you come from, that doesn't matter once you play on Saturday afternoons. Pope's another guy. And I think part of it, we get caught up, and I know I do as well, in the rating system. There are guys that are rated high and may not be deserving of the rating. And after watching him for 2 years, I don't know that he is. Now, I'll reserve judgment partly because we've played in Mark Richt's 1965 god-awful offense, and then Dan Enos, that jackwagon. We had to deal with him and everything that he was trying to accomplish with agendas and everything else. So I'll reserve judgment till this year. SMU had, I believe, two guys that caught over 60 or 70 balls a year ago. So the ball should be thrown around a lot. You're going to have a lot of opportunities in space. It's going to be a lot of quick passes, and a guy like Pope should flourish. What we really need is either Wiggins or, you know, one of these young Jeremiah Payton or one of these young guys to step up and be that elite number one, somebody that can take the top off. So Pope, Harley, Restrepo, all those different guys can operate underneath and get a lot of one-on-one action.
Yeah, I love it, man. And you know, Marsh, we actually haven't talked about this at all today, so I just want to throw it out there while we got John on. But that report that came out today that an NFL scout thinks that Jalen Knight is our most talented back since Duke Johnson. I mean, everyone knows that this podcast is a huge fan of Jalen Knight, and you specifically.
I'm trying to take my excitement. I'm trying to stay seated.
I mean, with this offense, I mean, we're talking, you know, Derek King could be in for like 700 rushing yards, and then we're going to throw the ball around a lot. You know, we got Cam coming back. He's primed for a 1,000-yard year. We just have so many weapons, and we have a proven scheme, a proven head of the offense in Rhett Lashley. Like, I'm with you, man. I know that you know, it's easy to just be a cocky Canes fan and then look like an idiot. You know, I've done that plenty in my life, but it's hard to look at this roster and look at this schedule and look at the talent that we're bringing over and even some of the production from last year or the year before and not expect 10 or 11 wins. I just can't really wrap my brain around it.
Oh boy. John, what's your prediction win total this year? 9 wins, 10 wins? What are you thinking?
I said this last year, if it's less than 10 wins in the Coastal Division Championship, Manny Diaz shouldn't be the coach anymore. I personally would have fired him after the Independence Bowl. I would have been looking for a new coach. Truthfully, I would have told our program and board of directors, look, I need every dime we get. We're going to hire Urban Meyer. I don't care if everybody hates it. We're going to be in the national title discussion for the next 7 years, and then he's going to quit. I understand why they gave Manny another year. I give Manny credit, and I've openly said this. The fact that he did something that Mark Richt and Al Golden and Randy Shannon – Randy Shannon didn't have the funds. Al Golden was an ass clown and wouldn't fire his buddies. Mark Richt wouldn't fire his family. So Manny Diaz is doing something none of them did. You better win 10 games. I look right now and I go, who has more talent than Miami on our schedule? You could argue that North Carolina has a better quarterback because Howell's really good and Mack Brown's done a tremendous job recruiting there. They beat us last year with a quarterback playing linebacker. Think about that for a second.
Yeah.
You know, Florida State is a train wreck. Michigan State is an unmitigated disaster right now. Nobody else on our schedule should be within 2 touchdowns of us if we do all the things that we're talking about. I still think we're youngish. You know, we've got to mature. We do have to learn how to win. There'll probably be a loss or 2 somewhere along the way. But 10 wins to me is the baseline, and you should be competitive. I'm not saying beat Clemson. You should be competitive playing Clemson in an ACC title game.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hope. I mean, Clemson's going to be good again, but I'm hoping that we could at least stick around long enough to, you know.
Let's win the Coastal first, okay? Let's win the damn Coastal. Okay.
Let's beat Temple first. I mean, we did just lose to Louisiana Tech and FIU and Duke in a 3-game stretch.
Yeah. Like, I mean, let's beat Georgia Tech and let's beat freaking Vautech and before let's win the goddamn Coastal for the only the second time and whenever we join the ACC. I'm saying 9-3 this year. I've just been just tormented by these Canes my entire life, and I've only seen 2 10-win seasons, but this schedule is so soft. It's so just it's ridiculous. If I say 9 wins, if Manny doesn't win 9 wins with De'Ara King and this schedule and Gregory Rousseau, absolutely. I will march down to Coral Gables into the Heck Center demanding. I would love to get Urban Meyer. I was one of the few Canes fans that said, yeah, I'd take him because he's a winner. I don't care if you hate him. He wins. I don't care if he's an asshole. Like, he wins. But no, I hear what you're saying, John. And 10 wins. That should be so basic for a program like the Miami Hurricanes. But and here I am just thinking about how amazing a 10-win season would be, and that's just pathetic.
You know what's crazy? I've been doing radio now 16 years, and when I started, it was 2004. Miami had just come off 03, where we probably should have won a national title, but Brock Berlin wasn't playing in the right offense. 04, we gacked away an ACC championship in the final game against Virginia Tech, but still won 9 games, won the Peach Bowl here against Florida. And then 05, people forget, and this is where people, oh, Miami hadn't been relevant since 2000. I'm like, that's not true. 2005, with 2 weeks to go in the season, we're ranked number 3.
Georgia Tech game.
Yeah, it was USC 1, it was Texas 2, it was Miami 3. We had lost our opener, but we were rolling. And then the Georgia Tech game comes, and then the Peach Bowl, which unfortunately I was at. We lost 40-3. And then the program was and I can curse on here, right? I can say what I really need to say.
Let it fly, bro.
Okay. They were chicken shit, and they made Larry Coker use his assistants as the scapegoat, and they got rid of guys like Don Saldinger and Art Kehoe, who were the lifeblood of Miami, and it's never been the same since that day. Larry Coker should have never been forced to make those moves. They would not have gone 6-6 the next year. You know, they would not have fired. Coker might have been the coach 4 or 5 more years if you don't make all his assistants a scapegoat. And then Donna Shalala, that little troll. I can't stand that little broad. I know she's in the Senate and everywhere else. She neutered our program and gave Randy Shannon, all right, you're going to go hire assistants for like $100,000. And you want to know why you can't compete? That's why you couldn't compete. Then you fell into the Al Golden trap. Like, I'm going down a really dark place right now. Al Golden is the only person. Well, there's some people in Miami that have blocked me, but I don't know who they are. Al Golden is like the only famous person who's blocked me. Because I called him out so much. Fat and sweaty tie guy couldn't take the heat, and he finally blocked me. And that was always our nickname for him here. When I talk about him, I wouldn't say him by his name. I just call him Fat and Sweaty Tie Guy.
I love him, man. That's beautiful.
We're definitely going down some dark places right now, though. I can roll that 05 Georgia Tech loss, man. I was in the Orange Bowl that day. We had just beaten Marcus Vick and Vautech. Things were going great. And then that game symbolizes what the Miami Hurricanes have been since 03. Like, right. The game, like, oh, God, John, you're like getting me angry.
Oh, you want to hear worse? How about sitting in the press box, I think it was 2008, we're playing for the ACC championship against Georgia Tech, and they run that stupid god-awful offense with Jonathan Dwyer, and Randy Shannon isn't smart enough to have D tackles inside the guard gap. He's got our D tackles lined up outside the guard, and they ran A back dive or B back dive. I forget what Paul Johnson's for D. I think they ran B back dive 30 times. Dwyer had like 240 yards, and we lose like 49-21. And I've got all these dorky, nerdy, old ass Georgia Tech fans talking trash, and I'm in the press box like, just shoot me now, because our program has gotten to this point.
Yeah, I remember it was like a Thursday night game. They ran for about 600 yards. It goes down the years. 09, we had a good thing going. Then Ja'Cory throws 10 interceptions at North Carolina. 2013, we have a great thing going. Duke, you know, breaks his ankle and we shit the bed. But man, like, it's been horrendous.
So here's what I'm going to say to all the Miami fans out there to make you feel better. Alabama went through 15-20 years of being in the crapper. USC right now, who has all the same resources Miami does, and it's the same, maybe even longer history, is going through the same crap. Ohio State for a few years went down. Michigan went 10, 12 years where they weren't relevant at all. Nebraska right now, who was, you know, my lifetime, and I grew up in the 80s, Nebraska was playing us for a championship every year, and we kicked their ass. Every program, and even Florida State, and I hope they stay down for time in memoriam, every program goes through what we're going through. If Manny, and I say if, is the truly right guy, we have the resources to come back. Clemson was never this good. They won a national title in the 80s, the early 80s, I think 1981, they won a title, and had never been a program that was even remotely in the conversation. And now they're the dynasty. So all we got to do, we got to weather the storm. I hope, no, we do have to start winning, because eventually we're going to turn into Northwestern or Duke if we don't. But every major program has come back. We've got the resources. We've got the talent. We've got the fans that want this thing to come back. And I think we finally have a board of trustees. Most of them want to win football games again. I'd say most of them, not all of them. Yeah. Most of them want to win again. We'll be back. And when we're back, the rest of the world is going to be miserable, because I guarantee I'm going to talk more shit than anybody on earth when my Hurricanes are back to where they're supposed to be.
Oh, bro, I don't know what sports company I'll be working for when Miami gets good again, but my God, I'm going to let it fly.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully you're working for the Fours Up podcast empire, you know?
Right.
Hopefully. Oh, man. Do you guys remember that? I can't remember which board member it was, and even if I did, I wouldn't say by name. But was talking during the off season saying how, like, the education part is so much more important than winning. Like, dude, come on. Like, it's Miami. Like, go to Northwestern or Duke if you want to just push education over everything. But, oh, my gosh, I'm just getting so frustrated thinking about it.
Right. Yeah, it's one that every time I hear board of trustees speak, and I forgot the one guy, I kind of got Marcus Lemonis or whatever the hell his name is, you know, trying to convince us what we'd see. I'm like, dude, I know more about football on my pinky finger. You may be rich and you may be business successful, but don't talk to me about football. I know what I see, and this is not good football. Yeah. It's time to get back to that. And again, for me, you know, my parting shot on this, it goes back to accountability. If Manny's going to be the guy, I hope he did a lot of self-scouting. I'm paraphrasing Mike Smith, who I worked with forever with the Falcons. Guys, we're going to self-scout here. If he needed to self-scout, if I was him, I would have gone back through every minute of every game a year ago. I don't care about the plays that were called. I don't care about the execution on the field. He needs to watch what he did. And then think about what he did to get the team ready that didn't work, and do everything exactly opposite this year. Like I said, my biggest thing, kids need to be accountable. I heard all the reports Jaron missed practice, and he whined, and he started. And then when he didn't start it, he threatened to transfer again. You know what I said? Bye. It's funny. What's today's date? March 12th? Has Jaron Williams announced a new school yet?
No, he has not.
Has anybody came and picked up Jaron Williams in D1? No. So what were we missing with him transferring? That's my whole point to this. Brian Hightower, has anybody picked him up yet?
Nope.
No. The kids that were in the transfer portal that people wanted, they're at places. Quincy Roche got picked up pretty damn quickly, didn't he? De'Eric King got a new scholarship pretty damn quickly. It's mid-March, and I understand we're in a different world with this virus and everything else, but those kids in spring practice at other schools don't have scholarships. That lets you know that sometimes you got to cut bait. I'd rather have the five kids that just got a scholarship as walk-ons than kids that don't want to be there. Yeah. You don't want to be at Miami? Marsh, I think we both tweeted this last year. We were 6-7 with y'all sorry asses. You can kick rocks anytime. Trust me, we'll find 25 freshmen to fill the roster that might actually want to be there.
Apps, bro, that was the best thing we could have closed on. John, thank you. I can't. This was a blast. We got to get you on again, bro. But thank you so much for coming on such short notice. And again, man, anytime you want to come back on and chat about the Canes, you're more than welcome to.
We will definitely do that. I mean, I work 6 hours a day in radio, and the rest of the time I'm trying to lose some of my fat ass weight. So outside of that, I'm always up to talk Canes football. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Hey, thanks, John. Appreciate it, bro.
All right.
All right.
Dude, that's
best show ever. I'm sorry. Like, that was our best show ever.
Yeah. No,
I texted you into a minute of John talking, and I just said, like, this is awesome.
Oh, yeah, dude. He is incredible. He will be back as soon as he wants to. Oh, my gosh. That was amazing.
Yeah. Three great guests. All of them need to come back on. Big thanks to Ryan. Big thanks to James and also John Michaels. Everything that those guys said today, especially James and John, like, I feel like I was talking to my big brothers, like, that I've never had. Like, it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
To talk to, like, people who, A, know the game of football, B, know the University of Miami, yeah, and C, like, they're smart fans.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, to echo what James was saying, a lot of people crap on Better Duck, but, you know, like, I kind of feel like this whole episode was preaching the gospel of Better Duck, you know? Like, he's definitely onto something, and the guests that we had on today are kind of just reiterating that same stuff. We can't get complacent with how things have been, or else we will turn into Duke. I mean,
and we can't get soft. Like, I'm tired of all these soft ass fans, and like, I'm like, that just that are okay with this crap, like, and try to sugarcoat everything. Like,
I was thinking of when we had Duck on the podcast, and he said, do you remember when he was like, you have to remember, these are grown men that wear face paint and costume jewelry.
Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, Duck is Duck's the prophet, bro. Like, I used to be the kind of guy that would just tweet out the things that Canes fans would want to hear. But, like, now I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to say what's on my mind. I'm going to speak the truth. And if you don't like it, then get the hell out.
Yeah. No, I feel you, man. It's good stuff. Oh, man, we should wrap it up. But this was what a good episode. We're going to have all those guys on back soon.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Great episode. Great day, yeah, man.
We're pushing like over 2 hours, so I hope no one cares, but,
sheesh, you know.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't care. I mean, people will listen. But yeah, I mean, and we got several guests lined up for next week as well, so the train keeps rolling, man.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be a good week, man.
Hell yeah. Well, hey, that's all for me. I am gonna go freaking lay in my bed, bask in my glory that my classes have been canceled. I don't have anything to do. I may watch Harry Potter, I don't know. And you know, I'm just gonna chill, bro. So
love it, dude.
Go Canes as always, man.
Go Canes, brother.